This is Magic Daigle Sunday Roast, May the 7th, 2023, going live. Love this new intro that I've got. Makes me sound so important, I tell you. Kia ora tātou, iho mā, welcome. And I hope you're doing well on this wet and dark and windy Sunday evening that we've got here. Welcome to the Magic Daigle Sunday Roast. I am looking forward to serving up the warm, hot conversation that we're going to have tonight. I've been looking forward to doing this for a while, actually, so it's nice to finally get this one underway. And, oh man, I tell you, we had some great conversations, haven't we? I was on, of course, last week with Pastor Arthur and also Michael Proper. Tonight we've got Professor Nigel Gray. Tomorrow evening at the special time of 6:30, we've got someone that you're going to want to meet as well. His name is Glenn Meader. He is an expert on basically your digital privacy, your privacy, and how to protect yourself and all those things. And he's the man, I tell you. And he's got a special connection to New Zealand as well, so he's very interested in helping us here in New Zealand protect our privacy. So he's got the Privacy Action Plan, which you can go and check out in the meantime, Privacy Action Plan online. Glenn Meader, he's the man, and he's going to help you and me learn about protecting ourselves. And I'm hoping, just hoping, that we'll be able to do a webinar with him very, very shortly. That's what I'm hoping to confirm, because what he's got is what we need to know. Anyway, what an incredible week. Oh my, I don't know where to put it all, really. In fact, you know what? I'm going to save it for the discussion with Nigel, because it's just so big what's happening at the moment. And I want to unpack it, and I want to unpack it carefully and considerately and just see what potentially could be laying behind the scenes of everything that we're looking at the moment. So, oh, it's exciting. But what I'm going to do, I'm going to do what I normally do, which is, of course, start off with a bit of housekeeping. So go to camera four. Thank you, camera four. And so don't forget, this Thursday night, we've got the Magic Die Call Health and Your Wellbeing show. Don't miss that with Sister Caroline Mansfield. That's going to be awesome. We're going to look at some incredible issues around health, how to keep yourself healthy naturally without using bad stuff, without being a slave to the pharmaceutical trade. No, we don't want to do that. No, we certainly don't want to do that. Now, let's not forget that we've got our petition up and running still. We're just coming up to 11,000 signatures, which is great. We want to get to 15,000, guys. So please help us to get this out as much as possible, to share the link. And this is it here. You can go to just, there you go, let's get the URL down, change.org/p/justice-4BillyTK and Vinnie Eastwood. If you haven't signed it or you haven't shared it, please go there and sign it. And we got over the magic 10,000 mark the other day, so let's hope we can keep going with that. All right, so also don't forget your t-shirts as well that we've got. And you know what, there's also that issue. And to prove my point, I'm actually going down to Auckland tomorrow to meet my lawyer, to look at these cases that I'm dealing with, and I'm going public with what these cases are. I'm not gonna hide the reality of what they're trying to do to me from you. I don't know if it's if they think it's maybe not prudent to talk about it, but you'd only want to be secretive if you got something to hide, and I certainly don't have that. But if you would like me to support me in the fight to protect myself and my whānau, please help me to pay our legal fees. They're just amazing. They really are. Not amazing as in good amazing as in, oh my word, how am I going to pay this stuff? And what I have done is, thanks to my good friend Glenn Meter, he basically said, mate, this is what you've got to do. He set this up for me. This is like a give a little page, but even better. This is called Give, Send, Go. And it's up there. They've called it the Free Pass to Billy campaign, and it's just fantastic. And my American friends are helping me with this. We just went live with it just a day or two ago, and we're coming up on $800 already. And so all of that will go straight into my legal campaign. So that is, I'll put the link up in the chat for us, but I'm very grateful for this type of help that I get, because nothing should be taken for granted. All right, I just want to remind us all as well, let us all not be ignorant to the fact that we have been played, we are being played. You know, just because you may have different views to me doesn't make you my enemy. It just makes you someone with different views. We don't need to agree, but we don't need to destroy each other. And the way that we're being used is, the establishment wants us to fight. They've created this left and right spectrum, and apparently if you're not on my spectrum, whatever that is, then you have to be my enemy. But that's not real. I don't believe that's real. That's only a matter of conditioning, and it's bizarre. It truly is bizarre. So let us be kind to each other, not Jacinda Ardern kind, as in I'm going to let you not be able to come home to New Zealand to see your dying relatives unkind, or create a two-tier system of vaccine passport where you have your vaccine passport, you're free. If you don't have a vaccine passport, you are scum. You are essentially scum. All right, so basically, what about this? What about this? What about this? We covered this last week. And when the US announced the end of COVID-19 pandemic, and hey presto, look at this magic. The Biden administration goes first and says the pandemic's over. 5 minutes later, literally, you've got the WHO says, well, Tedros says yesterday the emergency committee met for the 15th time and recommended to me that I declare an end to the public health emergency of international concern. I've accepted that advice. Well, should we rest well? I mean, it's not that he's a terrorist or anything like that, is it? Or that he's been put there by Bill Gates, that we should be worried about him and his advice. Well, I would probably say we need to think twice about about that man. He's not someone I would trust, that's for sure. But anyway, we're going to unpack this tonight and a few other topics. But to help me do this is Professor Nigel Gray, who's going to help me put some commentary together, some sensible, some logical, and on his part, very, very clever assessment around some of these things that we've seen, because there's more to this than meets the eye. And it's my great pleasure to welcome to the Magic Dykel Sunday Roast Show my good friend, Professor Nigel Gray. Welcome, Nigel. Welcome. Kia ora.
Kia ora. Great to be on your show, actually. It's really good to be back in touch with you, because we've, you know, long been out of, you know, not been in touch, and you've been busy with your things and I've been busy with mine and so on.
No, it's good to have you here. Now, I'm going to go right back, because it just seems amazing. Out of nowhere came the announcement last week. Now, I'm just going to get that announcement for us so we know what we're talking about. But out of nowhere came this beauty, and I'm going to turn our cameras on here. This came out by the White House media channel, and it came out on May 1, and it said the Biden House administration will end COVID-19 vaccination requirements for federal employees, contractors, international travelers, Head Start educators, and CMS certified facilities. All right, let's keep going. But the thing is this is the language we want to look at here, because all of this is basically this entire press release is really the Biden administration taking a victory lap. But anyway, let's have a look at this. This is what really caught my attention here. Today, we are announcing that the administration will end the COVID-19 vaccine requirements for federal employees, federal contractors, and international air travelers at the end of the day on May 11. The same day, let me highlight this part, because this is where the rubber hits the road, I reckon. The same day that the COVID-19 public health emergency ends. So there they are. They are saying it's over. Goodbye, COVID-19. Let's just forget the last 3 years. They've got truth and reconciliation committees across America now so that politicians and medical bureaucrats aren't prosecuted and taken to court to try and get around. Yes, oh well, I know we killed a bunch of you. Yes, we destroyed your businesses, but we meant well. We truly meant well. And so this was the announcement on May 1. And then, of course, now we have this. We have Tedros himself here. And let's just bring him over here and bring him down a wee bit. Global health emergency is over, WHO says. And away it goes, and it's no longer a global health emergency. It's basically over. And wow, this is literally amazing. What's the date on that? It's the 6th of May. So 5 days after the US made that fateful announcement, Nigel, they have gone and said, well, you're right, it's all over. Now, my question to you is, what the heck do you make of it?
Okay.
No pressure. Well,
what I make of that is that, okay, I'm always looking at things from a human rights perspective of, you know, what is this going to cause us? What inconvenience, what future life problem are they making for us now and so forth, or solving for that matter, because they actually should be solving. So looking at it from that perspective, sure, they're ending the pandemic, but why are they doing that? Well, part of that, I'd have to say, is the pressure of the truth coming out. And part of it is their own agenda for whatever they've got coming next. So it's a bit of both, I would say.
Yeah.
But, you know, I don't feel that I can trust these people. And I sent you something earlier, which is just an extra sort of validation of this whole theory, if you like, if we call it a theory, and that is that the Safer Communities Network, Which very few people know is throughout New Zealand, in many of the councils of New Zealand, Safer Communities Network. It used to be called Safer Communities Foundation, but they ditched that one, and I believe they ditched it because of legal reasons. Now, let me kind of explain on that, and that is the Safer Communities Network, by the way, is a front group for the United Nations. And how I got to first find out about it was we got a flyer in the letterbox that said, you know, come to a free sausage sizzle at the school and learn about safer communities. And I thought, safer communities, what's that? So I looked it all up and I discovered, you know, and I went down the rabbit hole and found that they are like World Health Organization and United Nations and so forth. And so I made up a whole lot of posters and did a one-man protest outside the local school of a small town, Takapau, where I was living at the time, and did a one-man protest. And people were wondering why I was protesting. And I had these, you know, posters saying that Safer Communities Network is you know, with United Nations and so forth. And that... the interesting point is there is a book by, who's the author? Dennis McKenna, who are called The Sellout of New Zealand. And in that, he gives the election law, which shows essentially that what they're doing is treason. And the reason why is because in the Electoral Act, which is still there today, you can look it up online, the Electoral Act, I think it was 1965 or something like that, and it's been updated recently, but they didn't change that bit, which is that a vacancy can be created by anyone acknowledging a foreign prince or power, or implementing the policies of a foreign prince or power. That's the words they use, foreign prince or power. And I haven't read the whole thing word for word there, but what the Safe Communities Network does is they go to the councils, sign up to it, they sell it to the councils. It costs a membership of about, I think it's about $1,200, $1,600. Now, there are numerous councils, Napier Council here, the Central Hawke's Bay Council, Rotorua dropped out of it. There are numerous councils that have signed up to this, to the Safer Communities Network. Now, how did they pay for that?
Yeah, exactly.
Ratepayer money, right? Now, did you get informed that your ratepayer money was going to sign up for a World Health or United Nations front group that is there to influence our society? And this is how they do it. So this is what concerns me, is the infiltration, the covert techniques to get themselves into these positions. Why are they hiding? Why are they being covert about it?
Yeah, exactly. Good point. And they've done the exact same thing with the Resilient Cities and Smart Cities program of the Rockefeller Foundation. Let's have a look at Tedros himself. Look at him. Now, let's not forget that Tedros here, Ghebreyesus, is still an active name on the Ethiopian terrorist watch group list. So let's have a listen to what he has to say here.
It's therefore with great hope.
Let's start that again.
It's therefore with great hope that I declare COVID-19 over as a global health emergency. However, that does not mean COVID-19 is over as a global health threat. Last week, COVID-19 claimed life every 3 minutes.
What a liar.
And that's just the deaths we know about. As we speak, thousands of people around the world are fighting for their lives in intensive care units. And millions more continue to live with the debilitating effects of post-COVID-19 condition. This virus is here to stay. It's still killing, and it's still changing. The risk remains of new variants emerging that cause new surges in cases and deaths.
Okay, so let's read. Let's go back to one of these articles that we had up a second ago. Just bear with me. We had, and because what he's saying in the, well, it looks like small print here. Listen to this. The World Health Organization has declared that COVID-19 no longer represents a global health emergency. However, it's still a threat, is what he just said. The statement represents a major step towards ending the pandemic and comes 3 years after it first declared its highest level of alert over the virus. Now, this is the problem. Immediately, I don't believe there ever was a virus, and I'm struggling to believe in viruses anymore. But anyway, excuse me. So officials said the virus death rate had dropped from a peak of more than 100,000 people per week in January 21 to just over 3,500 on 24th of April. The head of the WHO said at least 7 million people have died in the pandemic. Well, you'll find there's a heck of a lot more people dying for other medical reasons than that a year. But Dr. Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus, let's remind you, he is not a medical doctor, said that the true figure was likely closer to 20 million deaths. You know, this here, it's misleading. They're saying Dr. Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus, who is the head of the World Health Organization, so naturally you're going to think he's a doctor, but he's not. But anyway, they're saying that the likely number of real deaths is likely closer to 20 million, but where's the evidence of that? And how were those? How are they tested, these deaths? Yesterday, the emergency committee, well, he already said that. And so we go down to here, go down to the bottom here, and this is where you see the sponsorship of Bill Gates appear. Vaccines were one of the major turning points in the pandemic. According to the WHO, 13 billion doses have been given, allowing many people to be protected from serious illness and death. And yet, Nigel, did you notice they're saying that, but yet they're still saying that there's all this death happening. So they can't help but make themselves look like liars. But in many countries, vaccines have not reached most of those in need. So these are your poor people. More than 765 million confirmed COVID infections have been recorded worldwide. The US and the UK, like many other countries, have already talked about living with the virus and wound down many of the tests and social mixing rules. Dr. Mike Ryan from the WHO Health Emergencies Program said the emergency may have ended, but the threat is still there. We fully expect this virus will continue to transmit, and this is the history of pandemics, he said. It took decades for the final throes of the pandemic virus of 1918 to disappear. In most cases, pandemics truly end when the next pandemic begins. And I think that's almost like a message in itself. What do you make of that type of thing? Because it seems to me, Nigel, that we know that they've got the global pandemic preparedness treaty on the table. We know they've got the International Health Regulations Committee, which basically will develop the principles and the content for which the global pandemic treaty will be based on. And they're still gonna push it through, and that is the end of sovereignty. If they get that global pandemic preparedness treaty out there, then that's the end of, that truly is it, the end of our sovereignty. So they're saying that it's a continuing threat. So do you think that the language itself here, especially the way the doctor finishes his quote, saying, well, you know, it's only going to end when the next pandemic turns up. Isn't that what we were saying in 2020, that they would never stop turning up with pandemics?
This is all really, a for them, a drama, a playbook that is all pre-written and pre-planned, and they are playing it out. And you know, prior to all of this, they actually had a game kind of set up where they tried it all out. And I don't think that they can differentiate between reality and, you know, gaming, if you like. You know, that they're stuck in the same problem as our youth. they are playing this out, and I don't think they realize, even that these people who are involved with this, that I don't know, that there's a few clues missing in their book, but they do not realize they're playing with real people here. I don't think they've actually ever realized that the people they are facing are real people, just like them. And that is something they cannot face. They cannot look at that idea, because to look at that idea, they'd have to face their own harmful actions, their own past, and so forth.
That's exactly right, their own accountability. Well, I know exactly what you're talking about around the war game scenarios that they were practicing. Now, this one here is from 2017. This is the SPARS pandemic exercise with Johns Hopkins University. Of course, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, Gavi, all of them are there. All of the big wigs are there. All the pharmaceutical companies are there. It's all there. So, and what you have here is a futuristic scenario for public health risk communicators. But you know what blows me out about this? And we're going to look at some of these other slides I've got here. But look what they said it was going to be. They said it was going to be a three-year program. Look at that, 2025 to 2028. So this is the make-believe war game scenario that they've got here. But look at that, 3 years. 3 years. What has it been for this thing that we've been dealing with? 3 years exactly, and they've nailed it. Here's another slide. What was it going to be based on? This is the basically what this is up the top here is what the war game is. Beneath it is the reality. So SPARS originated from the Far East, but labeled the St. Paul's Acute Respiratory Syndrome. That's SPARS. And underneath there, what was the reality? COVID-19 originated from China, originally called the China virus or Wuhan virus, which they've never, ever have identified. I've seen people try and say it has, but no, that hasn't. All right, massive power outages were going to be caused. SPARS, 10 months into the pandemic, start of vaccine rollout. Pacific Northwest, two week blackout. 30 months into pandemic, 2 months into vaccine rollout. Texas has a 1 week blackout. Isn't that, that's weird, isn't it? What about this one? What else have we got here? Let's have a propaganda campaign. Let's, in the SPARS program, let's use big tech, celebrities, the president, hip hop stars, mainstream media, global health experts, etc. Exactly what they did. Presidents, John Legend, Run DMC, Bill Gates, Ryan Reynolds, you guess it, Dr. Fauci, Dr. Neil Ferguson, of course, now Bloomfield in New Zealand. Mainstream media, of course, the Surgeon General. Yep, all of these sort of stars of the medical world. And then this document is from 2017. So here's the plan, is that it's going to emerge in October 25. When was it formally announced? In December 2019. So not too late. January 2026, the US government contracts the SynBio, make-believe, to produce the SPARS vaccine. In April 2020, the US government launches Operation Warp Speed. And let's not forget, that was under President Trump, who's also an investor in vaccine companies as well. Antivirals, develop some antivirals. What have you got here? Colosevir over here, Remdesivir. What are the side effects? Side effects of nausea, headaches, vomiting, body aches. What are these side effects over here? Let's not forget death, but side effects include nausea, constipation, vomiting, sweating, shivering. I mean, this is like they've created a meal for themselves using a menu, and this is the menu here that they've done, that they've rolled out COVID-19. What about this one here? SPARS inflated fertility estimates. So they purposely inflate the numbers around world death. CDC fatality rate 4.7. Let's not forget that the rate was 4% to 6 to even 7% at one point there. WHO fatality rate there as well. Unbelievable fatality rate. There you go, 5% for over 60s. Actual exercise rate was 0.06%. COVID-19 inflated fertility estimates, Imperial College 2.2, and it goes on and goes on. And of course, the Imperial College's modelings were highly discredited in the end by Dr. Neil Ferguson himself. He admitted that the projections were completely wrong. At that time, we had our very own Professor Sean Hendy of Auckland University say that we were going to have up to 80,000 deaths in New Zealand and we needed to lock down and get ready for a jab. Actual COVID-19 fatality rate, 0 to 19 years, 0.003%. Let me say that again for everybody. 0.003%. So virtually no risk of dying from this disease, so-called. 20 to 49 years, 0.02%, virtually no chance of it. 50 to 69 years, not even 1%, 0.5%. 70 plus years, then you're talking at 5.4%. So, you know, unbelievable. Yet the CDC reported that only 6% of deaths were the sole cause of COVID-19. And that is the difference, Nigel, that we know of between dying from COVID as opposed to dying with COVID. Now, what they also did, and let's take a minute to listen to this. That was in 2017. That's the SPARS pandemic preparedness exercise, sponsored by all those people, Johns Hopkins, who's funded by the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. But look at this one. This is now event 201, sponsored by the CIA, World Bank, China, the China Center for Disease Control, pardon me, CDC, US, Bill and Melinda Gates, and of course Gavi and all these other people that shouldn't have been. World Economic Forum is a sponsor of this. Let's have a look. Even sounds menacing.
It began in healthy-looking pigs months, perhaps years ago. A new coronavirus spread silently within herds. Gradually, farmers started getting sick. Infected people got a respiratory illness with symptoms ranging from mild flu-like signs to severe pneumonia. The sickest required intensive care. Many died. Experts agree unless it is quickly controlled, it could lead to a severe pandemic, an outbreak that circles the globe and affects people everywhere.
The mission of the Pandemic Emergency Board is to provide recommendations to deal with the major global challenges arising in response to an unfolding pandemic.
Now, let me say just right off the bat, so Johns Hopkins Center for Health Security is a huge partner of the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation and Gavi.
The board is comprised of highly experienced leaders from business, public health, and civil society.
We could be looking at double the number of cases in 1 week and 16 times as many in a month if we are not able to stop the spread. That would be on the order of 500,000 cases, and it would continue to rise exponentially. In 3 months, we could be approaching 10 million cases.
We're at the start of what's looking like it will be a...
Sorry, let me explain this. So this is the panel here. This is the Event 201 panel, and each of these faces that you see represent stakeholders, and they represent stakeholders that for one reason or another have massive interest in a global pandemic. This is really deeply serious, and I'll get your thoughts on this, Nigel, but this is horrific.
A severe pandemic. And there are problems emerging that can only be solved by global business and governments working together.
Global business and governments working together. And what is that? That's fascism.
We have known about caps-like viruses.
Let's keep going.
This. How should governments, business, and international organizations allocate and distribute pandemic antivirals and medical supplies to the people who need them most?
What we've seen work very well in the HIV.
So here you got Adrian Thomas from Johnson & Johnson, of course, who produced the Janssen vaccine.
We feel there's, in fact, procurement through the Global Fund.
Also invested in by Bill and Melinda Gates.
So having a centralised mechanism, so financially able to procure on behalf of affected countries would be critical. I think the second thing is it's going to be very important that for the business sector, for manufacturers of antivirals, that we have clarity around what the need is and where the need is and who are making the decisions.
I think that given that the countries most affected are those that are low and middle income.
So United Nations, again, bringing this in. Why? Because the ultimate program behind this is, of course, Agenda 2030 program and the 17 Sustainable Development Goals.
Income countries with unequal access to technology, to to finances. The UN has a worldwide footprint, universally recognized, and universal membership.
A global stockpile would certainly...
Here we go. This is Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, Christopher Elias, senior member.
More rational and strategic allocation. But the reality is that we don't have the logistics capability, even within the UN, to bring that together in one place and run it. So this is where I think a collaboration between the international organizations like the World Health Organization and the private sector, which...
There you go. Private sector, World Health Organization, both unelected sectors, completely nothing to do with democracy.
Runs these supply chains for many purposes every day. Understand where the supplies are, make smart decisions about how to allocate them to the people who need them, in the places that need them the most, and then work with the industry to move those supplies from where they are today to where they need to be.
Just to underscore the point that cooperation among supply chain providers or businesses.
UPS Foundation.
That have huge supply chains can add a lot of efficiency to the whole process.
The question is, can you, through this international mechanism, really promote commitments?
So now this is interesting because at the table now, you've got the NSA here and you've also got the CIA as well involved in this.
Yes. It is almost unheard of that people...
ANZ Banking Group. Now, isn't that weird?
People are producing product without having a forward commitment for the consumption of that product. So the first thing that needs to be done, because this is not something that the countries currently control, unless countries are going to bring about emergency situations and co-opt an existing supply chain.
See, co-opt again, that word co-opt, that's everything to do with, that's got everything to do with working with multinational corporates. Travel and trade restrictions are having profound economic consequences. Now, you've got to remember that this is all pretend world. This is not real world.
International organizations balance the risk of worsening disease that would be caused by the continued movement of people around the world against the risks of profound economic consequence of travel and trade bans.
If there's some sense that there's a UN institution that World can do Bank. All of this, then I worry we're suffering from a delusional disorder on the power of the UN. It's really important to get those industries and their trade associations and an efficient leadership the public leadership.
What is essential, what is non-essential travel, we have to clarify this.
So what you have here, you've got industry sector heads that are talking about it. You got the banking system. Why would the banking system be involved with it? Why? Because eventually it's going to lead to Microsoft's Project ID 2020 and the rollout of digital surveillance across all platforms of commerce, trade, and human consumption.
To put this in context, Billy.
Go for it, mate. Go for it.
You know, when you think about it, these people are... To sort of coin a phrase, they're career globalists.
They are.
They are career politicians. These are people who their entire life have dealt with controlling nations even, right? Controlling banking systems and so forth. And to these people, you know, we are you and I, we might take on a business enterprise and we might say, okay, let's plan out how we're going to do this. And we're going to put three hotels, one in Auckland, one in Christchurch, and one in Invercargill, for example. And we will do it this way and that way, and we'll invite, you know, this person and that person, and we'll plan the whole thing out. And, you know, and then, you know, given that we've got the money to do so and so forth and the resources and so forth, and we would go, okay, great. And we would get our shareholders and we'd put it to them and they would go, great, yeah, this is a good idea. And so we would have the whole thing rolling. And then we would, you know, get together a year or two later and go, well, look, folks, you know, here's the shareholder status. You know, we've got profits. We And so in other words, these guys are in it for their careers. They are in it for the profits. They are in it because it means something to them. It makes them important in some way and so forth. And so they're going, you know, it's a game again. Now, think about this for a moment. And I've pointed this out several times, but in 2021, Pfizer made $18 billion profit from the pandemic. Now, all the other drug companies probably did similar. But I just saw a recent thing in the last year, McDonald's and Pizza Hut had made something like $308 million profit or something like this. Now, these people have the ability to see, because through their computer networks, we can see where the money's being spent, what's most profitable, what people buy when there's an emergency and so forth. All of this is on supercomputers, all this data, right? And they can actually assimilate all this data, and by that they can actually go, well, we need to invest more funds in this department, this specialization or whatever, right? Now, the question we have to look at, in my opinion, is what is Pfizer, what are these other companies and so forth, what are they going to do with their $18 billion profit now? Where are they putting it? What are they going to do? But think about it. If you had $18 billion, what couldn't you do? What couldn't you control? And so forth. And so when we go back to the beginning of this, where we were talking about, you know, the end of the pandemic, do you think that's the end? No, that's the end of one pandemic. And they're going, great. Now, we better please the shareholders for 2024, 2025, and so forth. And we've got to give them a good business plan to go forward with.
Exactly. And don't forget, let's not forget too, that interesting thing that happened just a couple of months ago is how Bill Gates ended up selling down his shares in Pfizer. But the cunning, this is how cunning it is in terms of Bill Gates and his involvement with all of this. Is that what he does is he uses the non-taxable philanthropic investment of the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation to capture commercial opportunities. He's very, very clever. So he invests philanthropic money, philanthropic free money, so-called, into special interest projects. He funds them, gets them up to a point where you know, governments just think he's the bee's knees because he's putting all this money in. But then what he does is, through the other part of his business, he swoops on in and he invests, he captures the commercial opportunity with it. And he's done the same thing with monkeypox. He's done the same thing with obviously the injections over the last few years. I've got his investment into coronavirus research going back at least 10 years, 12 years. And yeah, actually longer than that. And so what you now have, you got Bill Gates actually, he sells down one part of his commercial enterprise or investment into Pfizer. But what he does is he then shifts his attention using his philanthropic fund and profits to do it, repeat it all again. But it's not the money. It's not the money. This is not about money. This money is just a tool for them. It's about control. What I want to do, I've got a list of things here I want to discuss with you about, but I want to just finish this off because this is let's not forget, this is only 6 weeks before they declared an epidemic for the real thing.
Hey, thanks for watching.
Oh, what happened there? What happened there? Okay, that's the wrong one there. Let's try this one. Now, let's not forget, they're practicing this. They are practicing this coronavirus viral outbreak, so-called. And this is only 6 weeks before the real thing, 6-7 weeks. Listen, now this is George Gao from the Chinese Center for Disease Control. Isn't that amazing?
Right, you need the money. So where's the money? So government kind of supplies some money. A lot of, you know, private sectors, you know, some are sitting here, you have some money. But now you need a really coordinated, centralized efforts.
Hotels will be experiencing, you know, crippling losses during that. And we know that the hotel business in itself makes up 5% of the GDP.
Okay, so how hotels? Now, why hotels? Because they ended up providing unbelievable amounts of room nights for quarantine rooms.
Governments helping with tax breaks or subsidies of that nature to increase manufacturing of those types of products.
Control of information.
Now, listen to this. This is a beauty, because now we're talking about the way that they were planning to silence people like you and silence people like me, silence people like Robert Kennedy Jr., silence people like Simon Thornley, Johnny Unitas, and just goes on and on and on. Let's have a look.
And by whom? And how can false information be effectively challenged?
Now, this is false information from a man who's got a key role in developing the vaccines.
And what if that false information is coming from companies or from governments?
I think it's very important that we make sure that they...
So that is something to be really concerned with, because you now have a corporate person now saying that governments have no right to contradict what they're saying. This is blatant fascism and undemocratic. It's unbelievable.
There is concise communication with all healthcare facilities where these patients are being treated so that there isn't mass panic.
We're at a moment where the social media platforms have to step forward and recognize the moment to assert that they're a technology platform and not a broadcaster is over.
See, this is what they're saying. They're saying now saying that they've got a co-opt big tech censorship, and governments and corporates need the mandate and the authority to be able to make these big techs do exactly what they want to do, which is to censor us. But the funny thing is, the big techs are already on board anyway.
They, in fact, have to be a participant in broadcasting accurate information and partnering with the scientific and health communities.
See, now this is wickedest censorship and lack of democracy here. This is really troubling.
To counterweight, if not flood the zone, of accurate information, because to put the genie back in the bottle of the misinformation and disinformation is nigh impossible. One thing we haven't spoken about, and I'm wondering whether it's time to talk about this, is a step up from the part of the governments on enforcement actions against fake news.
Personally do not believe that trying to shut things down in terms of information is either practical or desirable. And we do have, I think, a couple of strategies that are available to us, one of which is the flood strategy, second of which is relying and informing and equipping trusted sources of information with the facts so they can then pass that on. But we also need
all right,
to
let's
actually
move
think
on,
about...
So you can get the... Get
the outcome of the CAPS pandemic in Event 201 was catastrophic. 65 million people died in the first 18 months. The outbreak was small at first and initially seemed controllable, but then it started spreading in densely crowded and impoverished neighborhoods of megacities. From that point...
See, this is the whole thing. If you're poor, you're dirty, and you're more susceptible than any of it. So this is 6 to 7 weeks before the real thing occurs, and they implement absolutely every strategy that they were talking about and they came up with at Event 201. But what you find out, though, upon closer analysis of this event, is that the script had been written previously anyway. There were other operations and other papers that had been written that were going into this. And so you had SPARS in 2017. They had a 2-year break, but they had intervening workshops. Then 2019, you're talking September, October 2019, which is when this happened. And then by the time you get into December, they already knew that the epidemic was here. And then, of course, by the 31st of December, it's a problem. And then it grew from an epidemic into a pandemic status event of public health event of international concern. So we have seen a lockstep plan, Nigel, all around the world implemented at once. Would you agree with that? And what are your thoughts about what we just saw?
100%. You know, it's straight out what it is. This was not something that just happened. It was planned, carefully planned. And when you think about all of the people who were trying to shut us down and on social media were saying, you're a conspiracy nut job, you're a tinfoil hat wearer, calling us all the names, and so forth, for what? The thing was already planned out, and they had the plans even to how to shut us down, how to silence us. And what is that but censoring freedom of speech? It is, and that is where I am, as I say, it's one of my pet topics, if you like, of holding the line, which is, I think, what we all need to try to do is hold the line on human decency. There was a nun, incidentally, that inspired me many years ago. She lived in Wellington, I think. What was her name? Patricia Bartlett.
Oh, Patricia Bartlett, yes.
And she used to speak out about sexuality on TV and or on, you know, sort of things like this. And when we're talking about sexuality, she was talking about, you know, the dresses being over the knee and this kind of thing. I mean, you know, and it was really, you know, quite almost humorous in those days. But I could see where she was going with this and what she was saying and what she was doing. And it's like she was trying to hold the line. And I think we need to do that. She's gone now, but somebody needs to hold the line. We need to hold the line for decency. And you see the perversions and so forth that are going on now and being called education and so forth. It's like, so the same with this is that all of this was designed to try to shut down free speech, to, you know, as you say, to control, to put in their version of their dystopian version of the future, which is not one that I particularly want. And I think a lot of your watchers, your listeners, don't want that dystopian future either. We want a future that has human rights, that has common sense, that has the ability to speak out, even for the smallest person, the most insignificant person, should still have the right to speak out.
Absolutely, beautifully said too. So we've got Event 201. I'm gonna sort of focus on that a little bit. We've got Event 201 that are basically creating a scenario where they can scare the pants off everybody and control everybody, control every aspect, looking at every industry sector. And you've got these chiefs of the pharmaceutical industry that are driving it. You've got a university such as Johns Hopkins University, incidentally, who did a report saying not the Health Security Center, but the Economic Center at Johns Hopkins University did a deep dive study and report on lockdowns, and they said they needed to be rejected immediately and offered no benefit, only harm, and the benefit was something like, you know, 0.002%. So there were no benefits, only harm and destruction from lockdowns, and they said they needed to be rejected outright. But you've got the World Economic Forum, which was a sponsor of Event 201, and you've got, maybe it is just a huge coincidence, Nigel, maybe it's just a huge coincidence that you get that you get someone like Klaus Schwab, the Nazi, coming out and saying, you know, this is a great opportunity to, this is a wonderful, wunderbar opportunity. King Charles endorses him as well. He says, this is a great opportunity to change everything, reset into a great new fourth industrial revolution where everything now becomes stakeholder driven. Now, that's the part that completely ends democracy, because you've got these people who don't give a stuff about anyone beneath them, so-called, saying that they want to be able to control governments just in case they say something that they don't like, in case governments say something they don't like. And you've got Klaus Schwab saying, no, we need to go into a new stakeholder economy on a global scale. And all of these people at this event are sitting around this table, unelected, self-entitled, basically planning out what they're going to do with our kids and our families. Because don't forget, you know, you'll own nothing. It'll be 2030, you own nothing, you'll be so much happier. And you'll be in this Project ID 2020, high surveillance, central bank digital currency, social credit type system, where everything is about health and climate change. And that's the problem with the Global Pandemic Treaty, Preparedness Treaty, because I really believe what they'll do, they're going to connect the climate change issue, because it involves human democide on a humanity scale, and that's a health event. So they're going to use the infrastructure created by COVID-19 to integrate into the climate change issue as well, because they've set all these things up now, you know, where they can go onto your land and claim, you know, under the Significant Natural Areas Act, claim your land because it's environmentally sensitive. Well, you know, where does it stop? But over here, so you've got the new CDC data here, which I was talking about on a podcast the other day, but the whole thing around the deaths never, ever, ever eventuated. Thank God, of course, I'm not unhappy about that. And so here we've got a virus that they've never, ever isolated. They've actually got no evidence, and it's come out recently with what Sam Bailey's been saying, and other scientists in the world saying actually, based on the scientific data of McKinsey from the 1960s in the McKinsey report, there's actually no evidence of viruses. And so that's an argument to me that's important, but it's an argument that has a lot of other concerns attached with it. Because what I'm saying to people, look, it doesn't matter whether they've isolated the virus or not, because no one's going to listen to that. The ship sailed, the horse is bolted, the world believes that there's COVID-19 out there, even though it's not been isolated. And but what I do believe is that the consequences of this propaganda of the control are real, and that's what we need to be concerned with. What are your thoughts on that, Nigel?
Yeah, okay, thanks Billy. The flu fatalities for New Zealand prior to 2019, prior to the pandemic, the flu fatalities were an average of 400 to 500 per year. And so that's 400 to 500 deaths by flu per year in New Zealand. And that is according to Ministry of Health information, when you can get it, because now they're actually manipulating and covering it, where they hide it in all kinds of ways so that you can't see this information. The suicide rate was also high, but I'm sure that's, you know, something we can't even get hold of now as to where it's soared to. The abortion rate is another thing I'm concerned about. The abortion rate's about 12,000 abortions in New Zealand a year. Well, when you think about, we have an elderly population, you know, like an aging population in New Zealand, so much so that immigration has been a growth factor for New Zealand, not births. You know, the abortion rate is alarming. So this whole thing of what the pandemic has done, these numbers are just something that are there to impress you, but they're not given in context, comparing them to anything else. They just, you go, wow, there's a lot of, that's an awful lot of people died. But how many people died of heart attack? That's not a good one. How many people died of diabetes during that time, and so forth? These are the things you have to look at, you know, keep it in context. Is, let's put some comparison there. As I say, 12,000 deaths, 13,000 deaths per year by abortion is an alarming number of yeah. Kiwis that never happened.
Absolutely, it's so horrible, actually. Now, I just had an interesting query from someone who's just arrived in the chat. So yes, this entire program really is geared towards dealing with the two big announcements that we've had in, within a week of each other. Number one is that the US government have declared that the pandemic is over, the COVID-19 pandemic is over on May 11. WHO came out 5 days later on May the 6th and said, guess what, world, the COVID-19 pandemic is over. It's no longer a public health event of international concern. It's finished. And oh, it's still a threat. It's still hanging there. So they're not going to surrender it completely now that they've done all this great work of killing everybody and harming us, locking down our economy, control, rights and freedoms, destruction. But this interesting little article came out again, courtesy of Sky News Australia. They come out with some good stuff, these guys, but just have a little listen to this.
The organisation says COVID is no longer a global emergency. It marks a symbolic end to 3 years of disruption.
COVID turned our lives upside down. But after 3 years, 3 months and 5 days, the global health emergency is finally officially over.
This is a moment for celebration. At another level, this is a moment for reflection. COVID-19 has left and continues to leave deep scars on our world.
It's, you know what? No, COVID-19 itself has caused some families to suffer, because those who would receive, would be able to catch any respiratory disease that they're pinning this disease onto it, are likely to have died upon contact of any sort of respiratory disease of its kind. This, as Bill Gates said the other week, and I quote Bill Gates, he said that this was the disease mainly of the elderly and the very already at risk and sick. Now, what we were saying back in 2020, and you were a part of that call, is that we were telling New Zealanders that by the information that that is now completely out in the open, but it was still out in the open in early 2020, but it couldn't be heard. Now, just like Event 201 said, they said they're going to flood societies with COVID-19 death fear. So you've actually got them saying that they're going to flood propaganda, absolutely flood it. So when we were saying these things, you know, we were only a little voice, and then they had an entire campaign to silence us, slander us, misrepresent the truth, bloody bloody blah. Disinformation project is created by the Prime Minister's office, and you've got that nut job Kate Hanna who's out there been insane, and now 3 years later all this truth has come out, where you've got epidemiologists at Otago University saying no, it's just the flu for most of New Zealand, we need to get over it and get past it, bloody bloody blah. But one thing we cannot let go, Nigel, is the harm that they've caused New Zealanders, and I want to talk about that in a minute.
It's a hugely symbolic moment. The pandemic overwhelmed hospitals, turned cities into ghost towns, and challenged so much of what we thought we knew.
Now, I've got to jump in again, I'm sorry. No, the hospitals were not overwhelmed. There was never, ever evidence of that anywhere.
About society, but the virus is no longer the threat it was.
No country has been spared by the virus. Those in darker colours have been affected the worst. According to the World Health Organization, there have been more than 765 million confirmed cases of COVID. Almost 7 million people are known to have died.
So let's look at that just 1 second. So over here, they're saying there's 765,222,932 cases. And yet they're saying that there is what? That there is, let's go back, 6,921,000. Now, what, you're the professor, what is that in terms of percent? That is so, so low. And then again, if you look at actually who died with as opposed to from COVID, that number will come down even more. And what the New Zealand government did admit, at least did admit, is that only around 32% of the COVID registered deaths in New Zealand were actually people that had died from COVID as the primary cause of death. I mean, you won't forget that time when that man got shot by the police out in West Auckland. He died from gunshot wounds, but he was found to have COVID, so they listed him as a COVID death.
Though it's likely the real total is closer to 20 million.
So they're saying 20 million. Even that doesn't cut the mustard. It doesn't cut the mustard to the numbers they were saying.
So why call an end to the pandemic emergency now? Well, it is partly the virus. The original Wuhan strain and the virulent Alpha and Delta variants caused most of the mortality. Since the Omicron family took over in January last year, deaths have declined. The version of the virus we see now is highly infectious, but less likely to cause severe disease.
All right, so I'm going to leave it at that, because what you have here again is MSM spelled into propaganda. The fact is, the infection fatality rate that we have today is exactly the same as the infection fatality rate that we had right at the beginning of this, Nigel. Criminal, isn't it?
Very much so, yeah. Yeah, there's so many, this is wrong in so many different ways, and I don't mean that, you know, that's an understatement. One of the things is that just the whole idea of vaccines. Vaccines, the idea of a vaccine was that a small part of the virus, this very small amount, was given to the person so that they could actually, their body could become stronger and through contact with it and then build up immunity and so that they had a defense when the real thing came along. Now, they never had a virus to put into that vaccine, so it wasn't actually a vaccine for a starter. And then now the other thing is this, that, you know, in all of this proceedings, I found out that apparently a snake bite, if snake venom, if you take it through the mouth, you won't die, whereas if you're bitten by a snake, you will die. Like, I mean, the chances of you dying by taking it orally is actually way, way down, whereas if you take it by a bite, then your fatality chances are way higher, and it's a poison, right? So because your body has an immune system, and that actually starts at the mouth and it goes through the body, and so that it kind of has, you know, the kidneys and the liver and so forth to actually deal with this. And then we go to supplements and so forth, right? And I'm not talking about anything in particular here, ivermectin and so on, right? Okay, but even just nutritional aspects, having your body in good nutritional condition is, guess what, something that isn't taught to doctors in New Zealand, right? They spend very little time learning nutrition. Now, why? Because going back in time, their schools were all indoctrinated Rockefeller schools of medicine. And so then they were educated not in the use of nutrition, they were educated in the use of drugs. Why is that? Because by that system, you could treat a lot more people because you're treating symptoms, not the underlying cause. And this is a very, very underlying basic on this whole idea of controlling people by disease, if you like, right? Controlling population using disease or virus or whatever. So they do not educate them in nutrition. And evidence on that is, go to any doctor in New Zealand, a holistic doctor is one of the best you'll find, right? But go to any average doctor that's come through the conventional schools, and you sit down, and the first thing they will ask you is, what are you suffering from? What's wrong with you, right? And you'll tell them, well, I feel a sick stomach, and, oh, did you have a cold sweat? How did you sleep last night, and so forth, right? Now, okay. What didn't they ask you? They didn't ask you what you ate, what you consumed in liquid, how much liquid you consumed. Did you have water? Have you been exercising, right? And those would be the first questions I'd be asking. And I'm not a doctor of medicine at all. I'm not, right? But those are the questions that you would ask. If a child was holding on to a doll that you knew was lead-based, right, had lead-based paint on it and so forth, and you saw the child suddenly sick, you would grab the lead doll and you'd throw it away, and the child will cry, but you go, well, this is for your safety, right? It's toxic, right? Now, how do we know what these people have been touching, what they've been consuming, what they've been exposed to, if you don't ask? Have they been on a farm and been working with glyphosate? Have they been on a tramping trip and been in contact with 1080? These are the poisons that are being dropped all over New Zealand. And these are the things that doctors do not ask you about.
Yeah, exactly. They're very, very quick to give you a drug. Anyway, this is something I put together a long time ago. This is what I was thinking. These are notes that I think I used for myself for something. But anyway, basically, you know, thinking about what they were going to do. What were they going to try and use COVID-19, the lockdowns, and all the things that we've seen in the last 3 years to do? Well, they're going to use the technocratic green fourth industrial revolution to gain total control of the planet and its resources, use us against each other, split us, segregate us, the small people that want to take, that they want to take over the planet, basically, and control the small people, using never-ending disease epidemics that are created and released into the world to use fear and distress to create compliance, either by reality or just through propaganda and fear creation. They want to terraform all of the earth and rid the earth of humans, of useless meat eaters, and restore it back to a pre-human condition. Now, that's not a conspiracy. That's essentially Agenda 23 mapping of the world. But the fact is, there never was a pre-human condition, as we were all created during Creation Week together. To control and contain and use the remaining herd as a labor force, give you a facade of or veneer of freedom, but never having the substance of what freedom really means. So you're essentially a dog on a chain, and you're all good until you pull against that chain. They won't use nukes, as it will affect the planet to reduce the population, and then so they're using the sort of mid and long-term approach formulae to reduce the human population in a covert way. Gene editing is required to bring the population down by causing diseases, cancer, and lowered birth rates and population reduction. What are we seeing? We're getting ready to see societal collapse because of the amazingly fallen birth rate. Japan last year had a death rate that exceeded the birth rate for the first time ever, and that they don't know what to do about it. So this is really serious. And also, of course, the increase of abortions isn't helping as well. To weaponize the media to attack and destroy the characters of dissident voices who know what's going on and who publicly fight it, weaponize the government agencies and turn them against the people. And we've seen that in New Zealand big time. To bribe, blackmail, reward politicians who will serve the plan, and that's what it's coming down to. What else as well? Attacking heterosexual relationships, pushing the transgender movement to lower the incidence of repopulation, because of course, if you are non-binary, or if you get, you're a woman and you transition and you go through all these things, you're not going to be having kids. If you're a man and have your a boy and you have your penis and testicles, you are not going to be making babies. To destroy the true character and identity of God, our creator, in replacement of a new religion of Popery and the Gaia Earth Goddess hypothesis. We've seen that in the Chatham House documents we looked at last night. Create a new earth based on the principles of hell and satanic majesty, creating a form of misery and subjection that humankind will be grateful for, because it's going to be programmed to such a place that men and women will end up thanking our abusers and our enslavers. And then finally, to claim the souls of mankind in this beast system. Now, these are just notes that I don't... Boy, it shows you where my poor mind's been for the last 3 years when you write something that on your day off. But anyway, poor me. But, you know, Nige, just in closing, I'll get your thoughts on this. You know, I don't believe that when people see the documentary that we're doing, that when they hear the story, see the evidence that we've got that shows you that the New Zealand government hid information, lied about information, propagandized the New Zealand people into a state of fear and panic, like unbelievably so, I don't believe that they can say, well, we did our best with the information of the time, because we believe we've got evidence that clearly tells us they knew these things. They knew the infection fatality rate. They knew from the post-marketing reports that the injection wasn't safe. They circumvented laws and processes around safe introduction of drugs into New Zealand. They did everything wrong that you can think of. And when you see someone who is a friend of our former Prime Minister, such as Bill Gates, who was given an open door welcome to almost every aspect that affects New Zealanders, from our digital data clouds through to our medication. So supplies you the jab. If that doesn't work, guess what? We've got the antiviral treatment for a virus that they've never isolated. You know, Bill Gates wanting to, through his company, get into controlling our water, along with Amazon Web Services to control all digital data. It just goes on and on. AI, the whole thing. I think when New Zealanders see this stuff, they're going to be outraged. What would you say to New Zealanders who are thinking that we should just let bygones be bygones, move on, and let things go back to the new normal?
Wow. Well, that's a good question. The thing I would really urge people to look at is think of your future. Think of your future. The future is the future you have, the one that you want to have, or the one that will be forced upon you. Because if you're not creating the future yourself, if you're not putting plans out there and creating, you know, ideas about what you want to do and then working toward that, then someone else is. And it's as simple as that. And if you look at the past is simply plans that have been carried out by either yourself or by someone else. And so if you didn't like the past, it was because either you did something wrong or somebody else stuffed it up. Someone else stuffed it up, you need to start thinking of the future so it doesn't happen again. Simple as that.
Amen. That sounds like wise advice. Now, I'm going to set up a panel. I'm going to make it a monthly panel, and I'm going to have people from overseas with it. I'd like you to be a part of it, if you would grace us with your expertise and wisdom on that. I'd love for you to be a part of that. Nigel, thanks so much for being with us tonight. I could just talk to you for hours and hours and hours, but we've gone 17 minutes past
I thought of so many things I'd like to say.
We're talking about
the influence of weather modification, education and so forth. It's just there are rabbit holes it's a rabbit warren. It's of information of how our society has been manipulated.
Isn't it funny you talk about weather modification, because I think we're living in it right now. I really do. It's funny that Bill Gates early last year came out and basically said, guess what, everybody? I'm investing in geoengineering. I'm investing hundreds of millions of dollars into geoengineering. Nothing to see here. Yet within the GMO envelope of products with Monsanto, of course, he's a major investor there, they've developed GMO seeds and plants that don't need as much light as normal to photosynthesize. And guess what he's doing? He's invested in geoengineering to reflect the sunlight away from the earth, but he already developed the GMO seeds that would be photosynthesis positive even without light. I mean, it just goes on and on. And now everything that, you know, people saying, chemtrails and all, you're just a nut job conspiracy theorist. Well, Bill Gates comes out and admits, actually, folks, I've invested hundreds of millions of dollars in it. It's all good, you know. So, we're going to have to save that for our next conversation. Otherwise, I'm going to get started again. So, Nigel, look, hold the line there a second. I'm just going to do my closing address. Thank you so much for being with us all. You've got a whole lot of people saying thank you in the 3D, mate. So just hold there a second. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you, everyone.
All right, folks, that was Professor Nigel Gray. Gee, I could have gone and got a cup of caro and sat here and just talked with him all night long. There's so much more. There's geoengineering, there's the education system, there's the transgender attack on children, sexualization. Heck, it's just never ending. But I want to get this monthly panel sorted so that different commentators, we can all come in together and talk about these things and get a broad opinion about what's going on. Boy, I tell you, that would be a really, really good one. But throughout all of this, we must keep the peace in our spirit. There's no other way to do it, because they want to make you angry. They want to make you unstable. They want to make you upset. They want to make you spiritually and physically unwell. And they want to do all these things. Don't let them have their way with you. I don't. My trust is in God. My trust is in the fact that I've read my Bible from Genesis to Revelation, and I know that my Bible tells me who wins this war. It's not going to go back to normal family. It never is now. We're on a trajectory, and that trajectory is to a culmination point, and I believe we're almost at that point soon. If you would like to join my weekly Bible studies, please do. My email is down there, just below my finger there, billy@ibc.net.nz. If you'd like some beautiful Christian reading material, I'd love to send that to you free of charge. And just email me, billy@ibc.net.nz. Also, don't be afraid to use this new donation page that I've got now, which is over here, which is givesendgo.com, free_pastor_billy, which is what my friends in America call me, who advised me on how to set this up. And it's going to be awesome. We just set it up and went live just over a day ago, and would be very, very grateful for your support, because I don't know how I'm going to be paying my legal fees. I know that God will help me whichever way it goes, but I need your help, Whanau. I really do. I can't do it without you. This fight that I've been fighting, and Nigel was a part of that fight as well for the last 3 years, has been very, very costly, as you know. So if you are able to help, I'd be very grateful. Anyway, family, tomorrow night at 6:30, let me say that again, 6:30, I've got another very, very special interview to have tomorrow, and that is going to be one of those interviews which is just like we did with Michael Proper last week. Now, those of you that saw my interview with Michael Proper, just absolutely loved him, absolutely loved him. And and tomorrow night I've got a guy that's got a very special connection to New Zealand, by the way. His name is Michael Meader, and he's going to go live with me at 6:30 tomorrow, not our regular time at 7:30. And problem for him, of course, it's going to be 1:30 in his zone. But he is awesome, this guy. Live your life online again with zero fear. And what he is a privacy expert. He has got it all figured out, and he is advising the best of best people all around the world, including in the United States, of course. And he is telling people how to protect themselves. I just want to play this little bit here for you, just to give you a little sneak preview. Let's have a listen.
Do you feel uneasy shopping online? Are you not sure whether your passwords are secure? Do you worry about being hacked? If you said yes, you're not alone. A February 2021 poll in Security Magazine showed that 75% of Americans are very concerned about online privacy, and with good reason. Cyber attacks have been increasing dramatically over the past year. But it's not just cyber criminals that you have to watch out for. Big Tech and Big Brother deceptively spy on you, track you, and record everything that you do online without your knowledge or consent.
All right, so I think that kind of gives you an idea who this guy is, and he is going to be well worth watching. What I'm trying to do is confirm and organize a webinar for us to attend, because I need to learn about that stuff as well. You need your encrypted phone, which is your Clear and your Freedom phones, which I've got a box coming any day now, so I'll let you know when they get here. And you got to know what he wants to teach you, because he's a good guy and it's his business. He's an expert at it. So we're going to have an interview with him tomorrow. Hopefully we'll confirm our webinar with him, which you can buy a ticket for. I'm certainly going to get one. All right, family, thank you so much. Do take care. Keep the peace in your spirit. I'll see you tomorrow at 6:30 here. And be vigilant. Stay cool. Stay calm. and stay on solid ground and be factual. All right, good night, everyone. Pō marae.